You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough. You're listening to Halford and Brough.
Back to Dylan Gunther, left circle, played it in front, they score! Logan Cooley wide open in the crease, taps it home, and the Coyotes win in overtime.
Thought about killing myself!
Oh, we have 26 shots. I mean, that's not a good ratio.
Ooh, that's bad.
What's the key going forward in the last couple of periods for you guys here?
Score more goals than they do.
Good morning, Vancouver. 6:02 on a Thursday. Happy Thursday, everybody. It is Halford. It is Brough. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintec Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
A-Dog, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
Halford and Brough in the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience a Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour one of the program. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver.
We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintec, guest list today begins at 7 o'clock. Adnan Virk, our regular. We're back into baseball season. Adnan Virk from MLB Network is going to join us. We'll talk about a multitude of things going on in baseball, including the elbow epidemic for pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big thing. Everyone's getting Tommy Johns now. Just getting new Tommy Johns every day. We'll talk to Adnan about that at 7 o'clock.
Do you think the pitchers say that? It was like, if you had your Tommy John yet?
Give me my Tommy John, my TJ. Mm-hmm.
Give me my new Tommy John.
Right.
That's exactly what they sound like. Yeah. He's going to join us at 7 o'clock. This is a versatile show today. We have a baseball guest. We also have a golf guest. Adam Stanley's going to join us at 7:30. And that's going to coincide with the delayed start of the Masters, Jason.
Oh, it's delayed.
They got thunderstorms.
It's Masters week?
Thunderstorms in Augusta. So I believe the ceremonial tee off with Jack Nicklaus and company is going to happen at 7 o'clock our time. Mm-hmm. And then the opening group will head out at 7:30. So okay. Adam will also join us at 7:30, Sportsnet golf analyst on this, which some people call Masters week. 8 o'clock, Thomas Drance from The Athletic Vancouver and Canucks Talk. Here on Sportsnet 650 is going to join us. We will look back at Vancouver's, you can say it, it was a bit of a roller coaster 4-3 loss in overtime yesterday to the Arizona Coyotes.
Worst roller coaster ever for the first 50 minutes.
Sometimes the coasters aren't great.
That was the climb.
It's like the roller coaster is going in a straight line, no inclination, no hills for about an hour.
Is this roller coaster for children?
Yeah.
But what makes a roller coaster? It's the highs and the lows.
Yeah, eventually it gets really good. It just took forever to get good.
Thomas Drance from The Athletic is going to join us at 8. Adam Stanley at 7:30. Adnan Virk at 7 o'clock. We've got a lot to get into. So without further ado, Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No.
What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it?
You missed that?
What Happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them online at bccsa.ca. The Vancouver Canucks rallied with two goals in the third period last night to force overtime. That was good, but they lost ground in the Pacific Division. That was bad. And it was the eventual 4-3 overtime loss to the Arizona Coyotes on Wednesday night. That was not good at all.
I won't bore you with the details of the first, 50 minutes of that game for two reasons. Number one, they were boring. And number two, I didn't watch them because I was playing hockey. But I got off the ice and I looked at my phone and I was like, I actually think it was the end of two periods at that point. And I sent a text to the group. I was like, there were some swears in it. And I was like, these guys are losing to the Coyotes and they have 12 shots on goals.
Keep that shot total in mind because we are going to get to that in a moment. True story, he did send that text and nobody replied out of both fear and resignation that the Canucks had a grand total of 12 shots at that point.
But in the words of Ray Ferraro, it was a sleepy, dozy affair for almost all of last night's contest at Rogers Arena.
Yeah, I like the dozy wording. Yeah.
But as boring as the first 50 minutes might have been, the ending was pretty entertaining. First, the Canucks had to kill a 5-on-3 power play that could have salted it away for Arizona. I listened to that part in the car, and Batch was none too impressed with Tyler Myers for getting away with one cross-check and then going like, I guess they're not calling cross-checks.
Yeah.
And then giving another cross-check, and the referee was like, actually, we just kind of give you a warning cross-check. But congratulations to the penalty kill. That allowed Connor Garland to snipe. Yes, snipe. His 19th goal of the season to make it 3-2 with about 9 minutes to go. Then, a few minutes later, with the Canucks on the power play, Elias Pettersson ripped one home to tie the game at 3. And boy, that was nice to see from Petey. And let's be honest, at that point, it felt like the Canucks were going to ride the momentum to the win. It felt like the Canucks had finally woken up from their sleepy, dozy effort, and they were going to take care of the Coyotes, who had played the night before in Seattle, who had had to deal with all sorts of, you know, tough news for the organization, and that they might not even be in Arizona next season. And it really felt like the Canucks were going to win when, you know, Philip Hronek got a penalty shot in overtime, but yep. Hronek missed, and a few seconds later, of course, the Canucks were shorthanded at the time that Hronek got his penalty shot. So the Coyotes returned to the power play, and Logan Cooley won it for the Coyotes. So on the one hand, the Canucks battled back from a two-goal deficit to earn a valuable point in the standings, and yes, the point was valuable. On the other, they lost to the Coyotes.
That's a tough one.
So on balance, you probably have to conclude it was a disappointing night for the home team, who were heavily favored to beat the Coyotes. But, you know, at least the Canucks got a point. And at least, and this is the most important thing, a lot of money was raised for the Canucks for Kids Fund. And congratulations to everyone who participated in that last night. Randeep, Elliot Friedman, everyone who supported the telethon. And thank you to those who donated to the Canucks for Kids Fund.
Over $750,000 raised through the Canucks telethon last night. So kudos to everyone that did that. That
one quarter alone happened when Friedge ate a Steamer's hot dog live on the air.
Mm-hmm. I saw that.
Yeah, that was
Friedge knows
that was experience.
Friedge knows a lot of things. Content is one of them. He knows how to generate content.
Other stuff from last night's Hughes with three more assists. But he did have his pocket picked on the Coyotes' third goal, which you could tell in the interview after him really bugged him because he kept on bringing up and saying, you know, like, I gave them a goal there. Elias Lindholm returned to action. He was on a line with PDG and Mikheyev. I guess PDG gets in there back in there as well. Mm-hmm. Lindholm spent over 4 minutes on the penalty kill, and the Canucks didn't allow a goal with him on the ice while shorthanded. I thought he played well, although he did finish a -2, because if you look at the goals where he was out there, they weren't really on him. They had nothing to do with him. One was a point shot that Seelovs just didn't see. I'm not going to sit here and say, should have had it, but I don't think he should have seen it.
Seelovs doesn't track the puck super well.
Yeah. And the other was the aforementioned play when Quinn Hughes got his pocket picked and went out to Dylan Gunther in front, so I'm not going to put that on Lindholm. And, you know, for what it's worth, Lindholm said he felt good out there, and I thought he looked pretty good. Mm-hmm. Now, I ultimately don't know how much offense they're going to get out of Elias Lindholm, but if he can really help a PK that's been problematic, well, for years, it's slightly improved this season, but it's still not perfect. Yeah. It's still not a great PK. If he can help that, and, you know, if he can contribute a little bit offensively, no, that's not what we all expected when Lindholm was traded. But it's an upgrade on a guy like Nils Åman, right? Like that's if you want to go house of positivity, he's still an upgrade on what they had before, I would
right.
say.
That was
because remember, Kuzmenko, people will say, well, because they had Kuzmenko before, and look what he's doing with Calgary, but like he wouldn't have played that much. Tuca didn't trust him. So Tuca trusts Lindholm.
Two things. One, I'm almost ready to block the word Kuzmenko from the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket because all the texts say the exact same things. It's like, look at what Lindholm's doing, or look what Kuzmenko's doing in Calgary. Mm-hmm. I was like, yes, he's scoring goals in meaningless games, much like he did with the Vancouver Canucks last year. End of sentence. Let's move on. With regards to Lindholm, you're right. He does provide an upgrade over the winner of the Aaron Rome Least Exciting Player Award, Nils Åman. So there's something there. If that's the bar right now, I'm willing to accept it.
It's a pretty low bar.
I know it's a low bar.
It's a pretty low bar.
I know it's not great. I know this isn't what anybody envisioned, but I'm trying to be house of positivity here. Now, house of reality. Since the All-Star game, Rick Tocchet has bemoaned this team's inability to put pucks on net.
Did anyone do the assignment for me? You know, I sent out the assignment for the fans about point shots. Like, how many point shots are not only the Canucks taking, but how many are missing the net?
So yesterday, the math on that was 79 shot attempts, and Tocchet said it was somewhere between 26 and 29 of them on target, which he said is a terrible ratio. So here's the thing that I want to focus on, because a lot of people, I think, are kind of missing the forest from the trees when it comes to, does last night represent anything? I mean, that was about as far. What's the opposite of a playoff atmosphere? Because that's what last night was.
Beer league atmosphere.
Yeah, that's what last night was for a large stretch.
It was almost predictable that it would happen with Arizona coming in and after the big win over Vegas the other night. Like, it wasn't a shock that it happened, but it's still disappointing.
So my takeaway, trying to zig when everyone else is zagging, it's my Thomas Drant stance. the shots and the accuracy of them is something that Tocchet has been harping on since the All-Star break. As a matter of fact, coming out of the All-Star break, he said, we were one of the teams that were tops in the league at this prior to going to Toronto for the annual All-Star Gala. Now, it's become an issue. Last night, it reared its ugly head through the first two periods again. Let's start with the clip where Tocchet, and by the way, he says in one of these clips that he's pissed off, so you know he's pissed off. Tocchet saying that they finally got some urgency in the third about getting shots on net after the first couple periods where they really didn't.
Well, we made a push at the end. I think we had 79, somebody told me, attempts at the net, 29 missed shots. There's too many missed shots. I didn't think we went to the net the first two periods. Third period, we had urgency. That's what I thought tonight.
More on those shot attempts, Rick. Not enough of them, or not enough of them getting on target. Let's hear what he had to say.
I just, 79 attempts, and we have 26 shots. I mean, that's not a good ratio. So we have to figure a way to get shots on net or create shots, like be a little bit mobile to go around a guy and get the puck to the net. I think that's what we got to start to do, because, you know, I guess that's what I'm more pissed at, is having all those attempts and not only having 26 shots on net.
Now, this is why Tocchet's a good coach and why he's a good guy with the media, as he actually explained in a very brief way about what they need to do. It's not that difficult, he says. It's real simple, as a matter of fact.
Get hit the net. Keep it low. I think Millsy scored some. He shot it low, hit a skate. He gets a rebound. It's very simple. You can't shoot high from the blue line, and you got to hit the net.
I have heard him reference this a couple times, that part of the reason that we don't do a good job of getting shots in is we shoot too high from the point.
Well, Horonic was the guy that was doing that a lot, to my eye, all season long. Last night, though, let's call out the guilty parties. Quinn Hughes missed the net six times. But he did have three shots on net, but he also had three shots blocked. So he took 12 attempts and only three of them hit the net.
Go low, Quinn Hughes. Go low.
You know, a guy like Connor Garland, here's a good one. He had eight shot attempts, five of them hit the net, and one of them was a goal. Dakota Joshua, we've said a lot of nice things about you. You had four shot attempts last night, four of them missed the net.
Got to hit
the net. So none on net, none of them even blocked. You know, even when you get them blocked, you're at least like, well, I probably would have hit the net. Actually, I probably would have gone in as that guy blocked it. But so, you know, if you have 29 missed shots on the night.
Right.
Like, part of that is the Coyotes getting in shooting lanes, and you're doing your best to, you know, shoot around them. And sometimes, you know, when you shoot around them,
Wesley Financial,
because the puck still goes straight when you try and shoot around them, it's going to miss the net. But, you know, when I see four missed shots from Dakota Joshua, I'm probably thinking like, man, you just got to hit the net. Like, you know, it's not like you're walking the blue line trying to find a shooting lane there. Mm-hmm. Like, you're a forward, hit the net.
Yeah, because, I mean, look, it's the usual cascade of texts coming in after a loss, amplified by people that are freaking out that this is somehow a harbinger of what the playoffs are going to have. I mean, I don't put a ton of stock into anything from last night, except for this, because this is a problem that we've seen time and time and time and time again. And let's be honest, as you get into the playoffs where guys are going to pack the center of the ice more, sell out to block shots more, I would suggest that having your shots be on target is a very key way to scoring goals. I know that's the high-level analysis that you get from the Halford and Brough Show.
Sorry, what was that?
Getting shots on the net results in more goals in the back
garbage
of the net.
Garbage can.
So,
yes.
So cool, there is a text here, and it says that Steven Valiquette from ClearSight Analytics said, lots of teams are working on scoring off broken plays, like shots off the end boards and shooting into traffic and not actually getting a shot through, that this is now an approach. I don't know if anyone is going to have a strategy where they try and shoot and it doesn't get through.
Can I have a question?
Shots off the end boards, yeah, once in a while. Like, who was it that scored a pretty big goal for them? It was Connor Garland off of Quinn Hughes missing the net a few games ago that turned into a pretty big goal. But I think most of the time, especially if Rick Tocchet clearly is not preaching that, right, guys? Like,
if he's going up there, because I wanted to talk, yeah, did you hear the head coach?
Yeah, if he's going up there and saying hit the net, then I'm pretty sure they're being told to hit the net. Now,
just to jump in, to be perfectly honest, if Tocchet wanted to protect his guys and shield them from criticism, he could fall, and I think this is Mike, the urologist from Brockville, trying to make this seem like an intentional thing. He could be like, well, you know, this is something that we're trying to do. Look at Steven Valiquette's data from ClearSight Analytics. No, like, the head coach comes in after a game and says that he's pissed off with the number of shots that aren't hitting the target. That means that they are supposed to be hitting the target. I think this is really cut and dry. I don't think that there's any underlying message or metric to this. I think that Tocchet is extremely frustrated now because they haven't been able to correct this problem or eradicate the inaccuracies. Like,
it's like, you guys are in the NHL. You can hit the net, right?
Yeah, and part of it is like the exasperated, well, you just got to get it on net. Like, I don't care how you do it, but you got to do it, which he said in there. But then the other part of it was, shoot low, like sweet chariot, shoot low. Like,
well, that's the ones that create rebounds, right?
Yeah,
it's not the high ones.
Right, because
the high ones you can catch.
Put it down. I mean, there was a play yesterday early. I know you were at hockey, so you didn't see it. This isn't really fair to Lafferty, but Lafferty came in and tried to do like a, I'm going to throw it to the general vicinity in the middle. Mm-hmm. He shot it high. Now it ramped up off a stick. It caught poor Teddy Bluger like in the throat.
Right? Well, if that goes off a stick, that's
yeah. But all I'm saying is like I don't want to call it like an epidemic or anything, but there's obviously a problem that Tocchet has clearly identified with these shots, especially ones from the point where if they're going to be broken plays, they got to be low and along the ice because that's what's going to lead to the broken plays.
Okay, I've been waiting to read this text from Surrey Ryan. The Oilers overtaking us for the division seems inevitable at this point. Okay, so here's the situation. I feel like that was like a DJ Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince song. I'll find the lyric. Okay, here's the situation. All right.
Okay.
The Canucks have 105 points. The Oilers have 101. That is a 4-point difference. The Oilers have 2 games in hand. So, if the Oilers win their 2 games in hand, they will be tied with the Canucks with 105 points. But, and this is very important, and that's why last night's point was actually quite important, the Canucks have the tiebreaker.
Mm-hmm.
On the Edmonton Oilers.
It's really a 5-point lead.
Because they have 42 regulation wins and the Oilers only have 38. So, if the Canucks go into Edmonton on Saturday and they beat the Oilers, they pretty much got the division at that point. They might even officially clinch it. I'm not sure of the math there. I actually don't think they would officially clinch it.
Quick turnaround on that one.
pretty sure they clinch it. They clinch it. Nope, they don't clinch it.
No, they don't. They have no chance.
But then the Canucks, you know, would have, so let's say they go in and they lose in regulation. The Canucks would still control their destiny because of the point they got last night. Mm-hmm. Because then they could beat Calgary, and then they could go into Winnipeg on the final game, beat the Jets. Now, where it might trip them up is if they have to bring this full roster to Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Which they could still, you know, they could still lose that game.
Even with their full roster.
Yeah, because the Jets are fighting for home ice advantage with Colorado right now. So that game is probably going to be something for the Jets. So look, last night was not ideal, but getting that point was important. And now they got 2 days off to prepare for an Edmonton Oilers team that may or may not have Connor McDavid playing for them on Saturday. Connor McDavid did not play last night, but the Oilers still managed to really, you know, take apart the Vegas Golden Knights, who continue to play quite inconsistent hockey. Now, they are missing some key players in the lineup, and they're trying to get Thomas Hertl up to speed. So they do have a few excuses. But, you know, if you're the St. Louis Blues, I know you were saying this last night. The Blues went. The Blues hosted Chicago last night, and I think they scored on their first four shots. Like, they scored on their first three shots, and then the goalie got hooked. And then
the old Greg Ballack special.
And then the next goalie went in and they scored on their first shot. So at one point there were two goalies in net for Chicago rolling with like a zero save percentage. So
Mrazek started, allowed three goals on three shots. Then he got pulled and was replaced by my favorite goalie, Arvid Soderblom. And then he allowed his first goal on his first shot. The St. Louis Blues all told scored on their first four shots. In 6 minutes and 59 seconds, the fastest first four goals in the NHL this season. So what does that mean? Well, for the Blues, it means they're still alive. They trail Vegas by 3 points, and they only have three games left, so the math is not in their favor. But the captain, Braden Schenn, said yesterday, he's like, hey, look, we didn't even expect that we'd be alive at this point. Vegas has gone in a bit of a mini tailspin here, losers of three straight. And here's an important thing. Vegas has lost three straight in regulation. They haven't scored any points from any of that. Now, this includes a game against those plucky Arizona Coyotes in which Vegas led 4-1 going into the third period. If Vegas somehow misses, and I think it's like, what, a 6% chance of the Blues actually pulling this thing off. But if Vegas somehow misses, can you imagine the consternation they're going to have if they miss by 1 or 2 points and they look back and they're like, we had a 4-1 lead on the Arizona Coyotes going into the third period of a hockey game recently, and we got 0 points out of that.
Well, more importantly, you'd have a hot take that's correct.
Yeah, that's secondary, though.
Oh, that's pretty big.
The take.
It's not secondary. You've never had a pretty huge hot take that hit.
I don't want to make it about me. The hot takes are for the universe. But it's like global warming.
You got to take the wins when they come.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
it might be the only one that ever hits.
I still would love to see it. I would love to see Vegas crater.
After everything that they did at the deadline, it would be incredible.
If Thomas Hertl came back into the lineup and that's what caused them to crater, to miss the playoffs, that'd be so good. It'd be fattening. It'd be amazing.
I found it.
What'd you find now?
Okay, here's the situation. My parents went away on a week's vacation and they left the keys to the brand new Porsche. Anything here?
Is that parents just don't understand?
Would they mind? Well, of course not.
What's the name of the song?
In case you ever wanted to hear Bruff rap,
parents just don't understand.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah,
it's a good song.
It is a good song.
Wildly underrated DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince cut. Okay. When we come back, we'll talk about the Arizona Coyotes, but in a different light, how they're going to be moving to Utah. Sure sounds that way. And of course, all this happened like right after we got off the air with Craig Morgan yesterday talking about the future of the Arizona Coyotes. So we will discuss that and everything else going around the NHL. What's up?
I'll just take it for a little spin and maybe show it off to a couple of friends.
You're reading it like David Attenborough transcribing hip-hop lyrics.
I'll just cruise it around the neighborhood. Well, maybe I shouldn't. Yeah, of course I should.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough. You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.
Thomas Grant's erotica.
Of course.
Thomas Grant's erotica. Thomas Grant's erotica.
Russian.
Thomas Grant's erotica.
PDO.
Thomas Grant's erotica.
O'clock on a Thursday, Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff in the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour three of the program. Thomas Drance from the Athletic Vancouver and Canucks Talk right here on Sportsnet 650. He's going to join us in a moment, the highlight of hour three. Hour three is brought to you by Campbell and Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell and Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today.
We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintec, to the phone lines we go. It's the Drancer, Thomas Drance, here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Thomas. How are you?
Gentlemen.
Did you have a big takeaway from yesterday's game? A 4-3 loss for the Vancouver Canucks in overtime to the Arizona, soon-to-be Utah Coyotes?
No, I more had just a hilarious coincidence, which is that this was the first time in 31 years that players found out they were relocating on the same day that they had to play later that night. The last time it happened, it was the Minnesota North Stars,
right,
who found out on March 11th, 1993, that they were going to be moving to Dallas. That night they played in Saskatchewan, a neutral site game against the Vancouver Canucks, and the North Stars won 4-3.
Oh, interesting.
So history repeating itself in spooky ways involving numerology, as it always seems to happen in sports.
So, Drancer, you were pretty confident that the Canucks would hold on to first place in the division. Are you still confident?
I was.
Yeah.
I still think it's more probable than not, but the margin has disappeared here, right? I mean, the Oilers have a gauntlet. They have two back-to-backs remaining, although I'd note that the second of those back-to-backs ends on game 82 with a contest against Colorado, assuming that Dallas has wrapped up first place in the Central and the Jets are kind of locked in the third place in the Central, which looks very likely. That game 82 could be, you know, one that doesn't feature MacKinnon and Makar, so I think that's mitigating circumstances. I think this is going to be tight, and I frankly think it's going to come down largely to a potential 4-point swing on Saturday night in Edmonton, which is, you know, probably why I'm flying out of the city on Friday now.
Do you think Demko will play in that game?
I don't. I'd be surprised if Demko plays in that game. My guess would be DeSmith, if you ask me to handicap it now. I wasn't at the practice because I was on the air on Tuesday when Demko participated but left early. I would imagine multiple full practices with the team. I mean, if you're sticking to a plan and you're being cautious with especially a goaltender's return, I'd think you'd want him to be a full practice participant twice. And there's not time for the club to get that in. So that would be again, this is not me reporting anything. That would just be consistent with them talking about having a plan, consistent with sort of what we've seen in the past from whether it's Demko or other Canucks goaltenders returning from lower body injuries. Yeah, I'd be somewhat surprised if Demko was in the net on Saturday. I'd expect it to be the veteran backup.
So with first place now in doubt in the division, mm-hmm. In your mind, what is the difference between the Canucks playing the Kings in the first round and the Canucks playing the Preds?
I mean, I think they're both really tricky opponents. Honestly, I in some ways, I prefer the Kings matchup, to be totally honest with you, for the Canucks, just because dreading the possibility of flying to Nashville. But the Predators, like, there's no lead that's safe against that team, right? I mean, they generate, especially in the second half of the year, they've been generating scoring chances, quality looks, like they're the Colorado Avalanche. There's really no other team in hockey that seems to manufacture good shots at will the way that that Predators team does. And, you know, to me, that gives them a fair bit of upside. Like that makes them a super dangerous opponent, not just because they can eliminate leads if things go badly, but if things go well, they can bury you in a way that I just don't think LA can. I definitely don't think LA can bury Vancouver, at least not consistently. I know they did this past weekend. You know, the other side of that is LA's dependence on a pretty conservative system. I mean, it's going to be white knuckle time every game you play against them. But I think that guarantees a coin flip series in a lot of ways. I just don't think they have the same upside cases as Nashville. And so for that reason, you know, I actually think I'd prefer the Kings matchup for Vancouver, even though the season series would suggest something quite the opposite.
How much of the Preds' ability to generate offense comes from that pairing of Josi with McDonough?
Yeah, a fair bit of it. But, I mean, they're generating with their other pairs on the ice, too, and they're generating with lines aside from the Ryan O'Reilly, Nyquist, Philip Forsberg line, too. I mean, adding Zucker and Beauvillier, you know, and look, neither guy's a difference maker, like an earth-shattering difference maker, but it's just given them more credible options up and down the lineup, and that's sort of a major strength for them, right? Like, they generate with their fourth line on. They generate with their third line on. Josi's obviously a key driver of it, but, you know, Josi, historically anyway, is a guy who sort of gets his more than the team gets theirs when he's on the ice, right? Like, he's a guy whose individual scoring profile always looks really good, and then you look at, like, how the team scores when he's on the ice, which is something I always just want to check, right? There are players who produce, like, Andreas Athanasiou was famous for this, where, you know, you check the individual stats, and it's like, he had 45 points, and then you check the team's stats with him on the ice in terms of what they're scoring. And it's like, well, that's pretty typical for a third line. You know, it's okay. So, you know, that's hero ball effective. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of been something that I've seen in Josi's profile in the past. It's partly why, you know, there have been seasons where he's been very high on my Norris ballot, and there's been seasons where he hasn't been. Just because there's an element to which if a defender, no matter how good they are, is like taking too high a proportion of your shots or, you know, being responsible for too high a proportion of your zone entries, it's actually cannibalizing like overall efficient offense. And that's been something that I've seen in his profile in the past. Not this year, though. This team is the way that they attack off the rush and the way they can do it with all four lines. You know, it's not quite Dallas, but it's, you know, it's not quite Colorado, but it's the next closest thing. And that to me is a very dangerous way to be ahead of the postseason.
Adrian, sir, I've seen a lot of people saying, I don't want the Canucks to face the Kings just because the series could be boring. And, you know, in that case, the techs are essentially blaming the Kings. How much of the quote unquote boredom has to do also with the way the Canucks play?
I've liked the de-emphasis on point shots in Vancouver's last two games. So I'm hopeful that this is going to be something we see a little bit less of, but I've sort of started to colloquially refer to the Canucks offensive approach as spray and pray.
Yeah, well, I was actually wondering, I put an assignment out to the listeners. Nobody picked up the assignment of what percentage of the Canucks shots are point shots and how does that compare? Yeah, or whatever. How does that compare to the rest of the league?
Yeah, it's about 41%.
Oh, you've done the work.
On shot attempts, it's about 41% and it's high. That's high. And I would look at attempts as opposed to shots on goal. Because one thing the Canucks do a lot is hunt deflections. So it might not be like if you look at attempts, you'll capture, right, that the club was shooting for a deflection. Mm-hmm. Even if and if they don't connect, you know, whatever. But if they do, you're going to see the shot credited to the forward. But for me, that's not a shot by a forward. That's a deflection. Like it's a shot attempt. The way I'd categorize it, just the way I think about hockey, it's still a point shot attempt, right? Even if it is connected by the forward, and even if that does increase the degree of difficulty of the save, like it's fundamentally a long distance shot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Canucks span those, right? They span those. They're looking, and you know they've managed good offensive results this season, but they managed good offensive results this season as one of six teams in the last 20 years to shoot above 12%. You know, to me, you know, even in this season where save percentage is far closer to the 1980s than it has been in a long, long time, it's a tough way to live, and it's a way to live that I think leaves you pretty vulnerable in terms of your dependence on finishing luck and bounces versus, you know, what the Predators and the Avalanche and the Stars do, where they're generating rush chances in bulk and they're generating quality looks in bulk. And at some point there's a, you know, advantage to that, in my view, just in terms of how sustainable that offensive production is likely to prove as the checking becomes tighter. Not look, you're going to need to score some deflection goals. Like we've all watched the playoffs long.
Sure.
Enough,
yeah.
You get into those games where you might as well call the game deflections instead of hockey. Mm-hmm. But you know, to rely on it, to be reliant on it when chasing leads, which the Canucks have seemed to be on occasion, you know, something granted, right? Like I was talking about this on your program when the Canucks were the number one offense in the NHL, right? So this isn't something new for me. I do think it makes it so that your success is a little bit more on a knife's edge. And all of that said, one thing I'd say is I've liked Vancouver's offensive approach a lot more in the last two games, and I'm hopeful that that's an evolution that we're going to see from this club.
I think the phrase quality looks is a good one to use. What do teams that get more quality looks do that maybe a team like the Canucks aren't doing enough of?
One thing that I think is a big part of it, certainly when you contrast Vancouver style with like Vegas in some of the games that we've watched recently between those two teams. And again, I'll note that in Monday night's win over Vegas, I thought the Canucks did a better job. Especially their defensemen, like Canucks defensemen seem to be in put the puck toward the net mode in a different sort of way, as opposed to having defenders move the puck high. Like I think the primary reason for it, in my view, is I think the Canucks have designed a system to protect a vulnerability off the rush, right? We saw what this team looked like last year, especially under Bruce Boudreau before Tuck came in, and how frequently turnovers, giveaways, especially giveaways high in the offensive zone, right? Or giveaways off of entries would result in the puck coming back against the Canucks, sometimes with numbers a million miles per hour. And I think the Canucks have become very turnover resistant, low risk in terms of their offensive approach. And I think that's partly because the club doesn't have the fastest defensive group overall, right? And is reluctant to give away those chances, right? They are really cognizant of wanting to control play in the offensive zone. And it's sort of one of the reasons why, even though Vancouver has generated quality looks, as I'd say, but you know, at a below average rate for much of the season, if you look at like actual time on a stopwatch, right, like SportLogic data, et cetera, if you look at actual offensive zone time, the amount of time the Canucks spend holding the puck in the offensive zone, they've been one of the league leaders all year long, right? And this isn't a coincidence, right? This team has, I think, looked to address or play team-level defense in part by holding the puck 150 feet from their own net and being really conservative with their puck handling or their puck management decisions in the offensive zone.
Yeah, down the wall as opposed to...
Down the wall. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, with the exception of Quinn not making that sort of move to stretch the defense and then try a pass into the slot, and you've heard Tocchet discuss it all season, right? It's one thing to have a turnover if the result is going to be a pass from a high-danger scoring, like an inner slot shot, a pass from a high-danger scoring chance. But if it's not, like, we really want to avoid those giveaways. So, you know, that's the philosophy. And for me, that's, I think, the major difference between what Vancouver does and what other teams do. I think some of the, especially the higher-octane offensive teams, especially Nashville, I think they're willing to live with a bit more risk in terms of the puck coming back against them off the rush. I think Vancouver is completely unwilling to do so. And you know, this isn't even criticism. Like, I think Tocchet's find a way for this roster to win at the clip that they have. And I think they deserve a ton of credit for it. Like, I think this is,
yeah, it's working.
Smart,
it's working better than the previous system.
100%. This is a smart, holistic approach. But what I'd suggest to you, too, is that one of the reasons it's a smart, holistic approach is that I think Tocchet's had a really good handle, too, on this team play, not just in a way that emphasizes their strengths, but also hides some deficiencies. And, you know, that's just something to be aware of. Like, I do think there's still some personnel limitations among this group, whether you're talking about the amount of scoring forwards they have, and why that would convince a coach perhaps to, even if you have high-end stars, potentially play it a little more conservatively with how you manage the puck in the offensive zone and the speed of their back end, which the club's done a good job addressing given the impressive way that this defense has been rebuilt on the fly over the last year. But, you know, does this team have enough speed, especially with their top pair not on the ice, relative to most of the teams in the Western Conference on the back end? You know, I'd certainly say that's up for debate.
Drancer, what did you think of Elias Lindholm last night, and how significant a player is he going to be for the Canucks going forward?
Well, I liked his game. I thought he was an assertive physical checker. I thought his penalty killing was excellent. I thought he looked far more engaged physically, like in the fight, than he has in some of his other appearances, his other 22 appearances prior to last night for the Canucks so far. But, you know, and he even had some nice sequences where, you know, he like sent that one cross-crease pass to Mikheyev after getting loose on the wall, but Mikheyev couldn't find the handle. And so, you know, how significant a player is he going to be? I mean, I think he can help this team control games. I think he can be a really significant contributor on the penalty kill. But if we're looking for offense and he's playing with Mikheyev and Lafferty, right? I think we're going to have to tone down our expectations. So it's sort of a double-edged sword here, right? It's like the composition of that third line last night, I think, is such that we're not going to be able to look at like points and assists and be like, Lindholm, you know? But I think he can still impact the game. The question is that sufficient?
Yeah.
Given the price that they paid for him, right? Given his quality as a player, given the fact that the club was hopeful when he was first acquired that he'd punch up their top six offensive attack. So that it hasn't really worked out. And yet, you know, I think given Vancouver's forward depth at the moment and given the sort of amount of potential third line difference makers that exist in this lineup in a world where Dakota Joshua, Nils Höglander, and Connor Garland have been drafted up the lineup into the top six. You know, I do think that's going to cause us to have to recalibrate our expectations. And, you know, maybe that's just where we're at with the Lindholm acquisition. You know, maybe we're looking at premium Sammy Paulson in terms of his role on this team, but I do think Lindholm's capable of doing more. And I certainly think he was acquired with the hope that he would.
Is the top six as it's currently constructed in the first unit power play with Garland on it, is that how you expect the Canucks to go into the playoffs?
You know what? That's a good question. I'll be curious to see if there's an itchy trigger finger. You could tell, like, if you go watch the press conference from last night, go to the 2:30 mark of the video where I sort of ask Tocchet about the power play, and I'm like, you know, I think I phrased the question as your first three opportunities, you had two shots on goal, and on your fourth, you had a really quick goal from Elias Pettersson off a quick shot. And he sort of like lifts his hands, you know, like, yes, thank you. You know, like there's like a shrug, like an acknowledging shrug. Yeah. That to me was, you know, just a subtle sign of like frustration, right? Like, yeah, please shoot the puck. And then he talked about how they held the puck too often, right? I really thought that was a noticeable part of Vancouver's power play struggles prior to the Pettersson goal early in the game, especially when the puck went to the flanks. It's just staying there too long. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, there's not enough there's sequences where the
maybe those players aren't seeing enough to move it, you know? Like,
I mean, just reset it then. You know what I mean? Like, they're really, you don't watch a lot of successful power plays in the NHL where the flanker holds the puck without going like low to high or sort of probing with their feet for, you know, as long as 4 or 5 seconds. Like, there's just, you can't score anything.
I just think when you're not moving your feet, that's just like a sign of lack of confidence.
When you're holding the puck
and you're just kind of looking and you don't have the confidence in yourself to maybe use your feet and open up passing lanes or shooting lanes, that's like a lot of like, I don't like what I'm seeing right here. And so I don't know. It's essentially like, I don't know what to do.
Well, yeah, but just go to Quinn Hughes then. And
that's probably the best answer,
like,
right?
For sure it is. Like especially if it's a confidence issue, you know, like just reset it up high. That's the safest pass you can make anyway as the flanker. And, you know, you've got a guy who can, I mean, figure some stuff out or engineer some movement or, you know, what I mean, you've got a wizard up top if you find yourself in that spot. And even if he quickly sends you a return pass, that'll open up a couple feet for you in one direction or another. And, you know, you can lean toward that and that might open up another, like, and this is, by the way, is what Vancouver actually, one thing I liked about their power play, and I noticed it especially after the two goals, right? So they scored the two goals off point shots against Vegas in the first period on Monday. And then they had a couple power play opportunities that they didn't score, but that I thought looked really threatening, where you could see them just like probing, like, okay, that pass is open. I'm going to take a step toward it, closes up. Okay, down low. Like, you could see them probing the Vegas penalty kill. And I thought that was a really good process indicator. And then, you know, we see last night and the puck was just dying on the flanks. Like,
yeah.
It's not moving.
It is hard because, like, you do want to take advantage of Quinn Hughes. And maybe these things go hand in hand, but, you know, I don't think any power play is going to be successful unless you are able to work the puck down low and work it down low fairly consistently. And I don't know, maybe that's where the Canucks power play has struggled at times, to maintain possession down low. And, you know, they get checked off down low and then they don't regain possession of the puck. And then it's gone. So I understand why you'd want to work it back to Quinn Hughes, but I just don't think that's the only answer. Unless you're working it down low, I think your power play is going to struggle.
Yeah, I almost wonder, like, for me anyway, one thing I always think of when I see a team moving the puck slowly, especially from the flanks, I always think, like, what I'd do is I'd switch to have guys on their strong sides, like on their downhill sides, almost as like a brief punishment, because especially on your downhill sides, you need to move the puck side to side fast. Otherwise you're not going to, because the one timer threat's gone, right? Like, you're going to need to be able to gather and shoot quickly at a goaltender who's moving against the grain. So it sort of changes that emphasis. I just, to me anyway, that's something that I immediately, when I'm watching live, I mean, J-Pat will tell you this, like, when I'm watching live and the puck dies on the flanks, either team, I'm always just like, move it. Like, I'll say it loud. Like, it just bothers me so much. You just so rarely see goals scored where the flanker holds the puck for multiple seconds prior to moving it.
Well, remind me not to watch too many games with you. It's like watching basketball with Halford. He doesn't shut up the whole time.
What?
Every time there's a three-point attempt, he's like, got it. And then it's like, clang. Clang.
Sorry, I'm that guy too. I also like the guy who's like in breaker when you're watching football, you know, and then it's like a run. Play action. Absolutely not play action.
So last week it was Galactic Jihad, and this week it's Premium Sammy Paulson. Drance, you are nothing if not a content factory. Thanks for doing this today, bud. Enjoy Edmonton. It should be a lot of fun this weekend.
Yeah, you know what? Should be a good game. Thanks, boys. Be well.
Have a good one. That's Thomas Drance from the Athletic Vancouver and Canucks Talk here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.